From Hollywood, Camel Cigarettes presents The Screen Guild Players. Our stars, Deanna Durbin, Dick Haynes, and Charles Irwin. Our play, Up in Central Park. Our host, Camel Cigarettes.
Experience is the best teacher.
Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. Yes, let your T-zone tell you why. That's T for taste and T for throat, where you judge any cigarette. Try a Camel and see how your taste enjoys Camel's rich, full flavor. See what your throat has to report on Camel's cool, cool mildness. Tonight, Camel Cigarettes presents the Screen Guild Players in one of the red-letter events of the radio season. Universal International's great new musical hit, Up in Central Park. A delightful musical story of old New York in the 1870s, starring Dick Haynes as the reporter and Deanna Durbin as the girl, with Charles Irwin as her father, Timothy Moore. The Camel Screen Guild Players in Up in Central Park.
Song. That was their victory hymn. We've been hearing that song too often in those days, back around 1870, that was. Every election night, in fact, as Boss Tweed and the party celebrated another crooked victory at the polls. I was doing what I could to fight them. As a reporter for the New York Times, I told our readers plenty about William Marcy Tweed.
Extra, read all about it in the Times, how Boss Tweed has stolen the city government.
Yes, I knew it was wrong, and I just couldn't prove it. It's a pretty rotten mess, all right. And you might wonder where Rosie Moore came in. Rosie Moore and her father fresh from abroad. Fresh from the fragrant old sod itself. Well, as a matter of fact, they came in that same day on the immigration launch from Ellis Island. And Rosie, standing at the rail, catching her first breathless glimpse of New York, said what millions of others had said before her, except that she said it in her own special way.
See what I see. If this is America, this is for me. It's a great land of plenty, and plenty is what at the moment girl hasn't got.
Let you know, Rosie, after I've had my feet on it for a while.
Oh, it's a wonderful place. Everyone wears fine clothes and gets to be a millionaire.
Well, then, let's be going and getting our share. Come along, girl. You're preparing to land.
Right this way, my friends. Right this way for transportation. Just step along to the omnibuses. We'll be glad to take you any place in the city.
Father, did you hear that? Oh, isn't it wonderful?
Come along, friend. There's plenty of room. Here, let me take your trunk, sir. Come along, folks.
Oh, you don't now. We're not millionaires yet. We'll not be wasting our money on cabs.
Oh, you don't understand. There's no charge for this service. It's just a little welcome to new arrivals, provided absolutely free by Mr. William Marcy Tweed.
Did you say so? Rosie, that's mighty decent of Mr. Tweed, isn't it?
Yes, Father.
Mr. Tweed must be a very great man.
Great? Why, he's the boss of the whole country.
Do you say so?
Would his name be in this booklet they gave us?
That? No, that's the Constitution of the United States. That was written almost 100 years ago. It's completely out of date. Now, shall we go along?
Well, if you could let us down at some nice boarding house. Someplace where 'tis not too expensive.
Oh, you'll have plenty of time for that later. Now, first you'll want to go and vote the straight party ticket.
Vote? But how can my father vote when he isn't even a citizen?
Well, he won't be voting for himself. He'll be voting in somebody else's name.
Well, I know.
You see, there are lots of good party men, all registered voters who are too sick to come to the polls. And then there are lots of them who passed away, heaven rest their souls. But just because a man's had the misfortune to die, that's no reason to deny him his vote, is it now?
Well, that wouldn't be showing the proper respect for the dead.
No. Now, you'll be doing a very charitable thing when you vote. But we don't expect you to be too charitable. So we're going to make you a present of $2.
$2? Rosie, how much is that in money?
About 8 shillings, Father.
Do you say so? Tell me, mister, is there any limit on how many times a man can vote for these here dead party men?
Of course not. This is a free country.
Well, then, let's not be wasting so much time. Come along, mister. Let's go and vote.
And so Timothy Moore went out and voted. He voted quite enthusiastically, too. In fact, he voted 26 times. Now, even for the party, that was a record. So naturally, Mr. Moore came to Boss Tweed's attention. And as it happened, he fitted right into Tweed's plan.
Apparently loyal, extremely zealous, and obviously too stupid to ask any questions. Gentlemen, I'm going to make him superintendent of Central Park.
Superintendent? Well, are we working on Central Park now, boss?
We will be, Rogan. Can't go on improving the courthouse forever. We've already drawn $7 million from that. So now we'll just rebuild Central Park.
Well, what's wrong with the park? Well,
I'm surprised at you, man. Haven't you heard? There's too much dirt under the grass.
Well, the very next day, Mr. Moore was installed in the superintendent's cottage in Central Park. By the saints, he thought, the more fantastic look. Yes, luck for him and luck for me, too. You see, that was how I first met Rosie. It was just a week or so later, I think, and I was walking in the park that afternoon, and I...
John, if you'll excuse me, you were sitting on a bench. I was walking.
That's right, Rosie, you were walking. Till you saw the carousel. You know, you were just like a little girl. You rushed right over, bought a ticket, and got on.
Well, I must say you weren't very far behind me. I glanced around, and there you were. You looked at me.
You looked at me.
And then... very softly, you started to sing.
The stately old trees waltz around in the breeze near the small carousel in the park.
The children and maidens quite empty their purses
to ride to the music.
Fun. Why didn't you tell me you could sing like that?
Because I'm not in the habit of talking to strangers.
Well, then, that's something we ought to remedy. I'm John Matthews. I'm a newspaper man. My parents are married, and I've never been in jail. Now, if you'll tell me about yourself, we won't be strangers anymore.
I'm sorry. I really must be going
away. Oh, but you can't just run away like this. Will I see you again?
I'm sure I can't today. Unless...
unless what?
Unless you're out here tomorrow. Same time. Same place.
Thank you. Well, I walked around on air for a while after that. Didn't even notice where I was going until suddenly I found myself in the park zoo. There was only one other person there. A funny old duffer feeding the animals in their cages. I watched him for a minute or two, and then I couldn't help saying to him, "Excuse me, but I think that sign says don't feed the animals, doesn't it?"
Supposing it does, would it be applying to the superintendent?
You mean you're the superintendent?
The name is Moore. Timothy Moore. I'm superintendent of this here whole park.
I'm terribly sorry, Mr. Moore. I didn't know. I never expected to find such an important man actually working with his hands.
Well, now, ordinarily, I stay in the office and just superintend. But I like to feed the wild birds myself.
Ah.
And them ducks will be even wilder than usual if I don't hurry up and give them their grapes.
Grapes? I thought ducks ate grain.
Ah, that they do. But they taste much better when they've been fed on grapes.
But who's going to taste them?
The boss.
Mr. Tweed? You mean he's the animals from the zoo?
No, not all of them. Only the ducks and the pheasants and the grouse.
I see. Well, nice to have met you, Mr. Moore.
You just got here, lad. You're not leaving already.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to. You take care of the ducks and pheasant. I'm going to cook somebody's goose.
Nice story you did on that park zoo, Matthews. The sort of thing that people remember.
Well, thank you, sir.
I don't imagine Mr. Tweed will have any appetite for wild duck today.
I hope not, sir. Now, if I can just get proof, facts and figures on the really big deal.
I'm looking for Mr. John Matthews.
Well, I'm John Well, hello. What are you doing here? I didn't expect to see you till... Huh?
I think you're a mean, low, rotten snake. What did you have against my father? Why did you have to get him in trouble? Everything was so wonderful, and you got him fired.
Fired from what? Hey! Wait a minute. This could easily become a habit. Look, I didn't get your father fired. I don't even know your father.
Don't try to lie. You wrote a story about him in this morning's paper.
This morning's paper? Oh. Then he must be the little...
Yes, he is. And next time, pick on someone your own size.
Well, now there's a broth of a girl who's really seen him. A friend of yours, Matthews?
No, sir. I wouldn't exactly say friend. That's the girl I'm going to marry.
In just a moment, Deanna Durbin, Dick Haynes, and Charles Irwin will return to the Camel Screen Guild microphone in Act Two of Up in Central Park. Deanna Durbin was a screen star at an age when most girls are just starting algebra lessons. Now, in the finished perfection of her performance, she proves how important all that early experience has been. Yes, experience is the best teacher, whether it's in singing and acting or in choosing a cigarette. Millions of people smoke Camels because they learn through experience that Camels suit them best. They tried different brands of cigarettes, tried and compared them for flavor, for mildness, and for all-round smoking enjoyment. And they learned that Camels are best for rich, full flavor, cool, cool mildness. Yes, millions have learned that Camels' choice tobaccos, properly aged and expertly blended, are just what they want in a cigarette.
More people are smoking Camels than ever before.
Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel yourself. Let Camel's rich, full flavor and cool, cool mildness show you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. And remember, Camels by the carton are the best buy. It saves you money and keeps the supply on hand. And now Camel Cigarettes present Dick Haynes, Deanna Durbin, and Charles Irwin in Act Two of Up in Central Park.
Well, I suppose that love sometimes happens that way. Suddenly, blindingly, between a couple of slaps. When Rosie walked out, my face was tingling, but that was nothing compared to my heart. And so that evening found me back in Central Park, tapping hopefully on the superintendent's door.
Yes, I'll be out of it. Oh, it's you. What are you doing here?
I want to talk to you.
Well, I don't want to talk to you.
Look, I'm sorry about this morning. I'm sorry you had to be upset, but I can't say I'm sorry your father lost his job. That was a good thing for him.
You mean to stand there and say...
Besides, I've got him another job. A good, honest job with the Times.
You have? Why?
Well, that should be rather obvious. He has a very charming daughter. Oh, believe me, when I met you yesterday...
I know. You fell head over heels. You began to see stars.
No, that was when you slapped me. But even then, I thought you were wonderful.
I'm not. But I'm glad you think I am.
Oh, Rosie, darling.
Oh, John. You shouldn't do it again.
Miss Moore?
Yes?
Mr. Tweed sent me the picture, Miss.
Oh, I, you'll have to wait. I'm not quite ready.
Right.
John.
And what is Tweed's carriage doing here?
I was going to tell you about that. I went to see Mr. Tweed today, and he's going to make Father superintendent again. So he won't be needing the job you got for him. So it's very sweet of you to do it.
I see. You just walked in on Mr. Tweed and had him put your father back on. You must know him pretty well.
Oh, no, I don't. But he was awfully nice about it.
And I suppose you're going to run down there tonight to tell him how nice he is.
Well, why shouldn't I? He's asked me to have supper with him, and I think he is nice.
But I've told you what sort of man he is.
You told me a lot of things you can't even prove.
Look! Oh, look, it's silly for us to be yelling at each other. If we can't agree on Tweed, we just won't discuss him. But I don't want you to go down there tonight.
Oh, we won't discuss it. We'll just do it your way. Is that it? Well, you're not going to tell me what to do or what sort of friends to make.
Rosie, if you'll just listen
to
me for a minute.
I don't believe I have time.
Well, I didn't sleep very much that night. And the next day was worse. Until I received a note from Rosie. Dear John, it said, I'm very sorry. Do you think we could have supper together, 8 o'clock, at Setson House? I was there before 8, walking on air again. And I suppose the head waiter was slightly puzzled.
May I help you, sir?
No, thanks. If I can help you, just let me know.
Did you have a reservation?
Oh, yes. I had several until tonight. But now they're all gone. I haven't the slightest doubt about her anymore. She's perfect.
You were expecting a lady?
Oh, believe me, that doesn't even begin to describe it.
The air seems fresh, the lights grow bright, the walls are charged with dynamite, the artificial flowers bloom when she walks in the room. The statues smile, the curtains wave, the big stuffed elf becomes her slave, the antique clock begins to boom when she walks in the room. The family album opens and relatives galore look up and smile like angels they never smiled before. And there she'll stand so sweet and cool while I stand waiting like a fool to meet my sweet and lovely doom.
Did you bring them for someone else?
You might as well have them. My other girl didn't show up.
I believe I'll take them. As long as my other fella isn't here to see me.
Well, Miss Moore.
Why, it's Mr. Tweed.
What a delightful surprise, my dear. Hello, Matthew. Nice to see you.
Hello.
I was just on my way to dinner. Won't you join me?
Mr. Tweed, are you sure this is a delightful surprise, or is it just delightful?
You're a very shrewd young man.
Yeah.
Yeah, frankly, Miss Moore and I did plan this meeting. I want to talk to you.
Oh, really? About what?
Well, I fancy myself a bit of a critic, Matthews, and it's my opinion that you could write a book. A book that would live. Yeah, I'd like to make it possible for you to do so.
Financially, I presume?
Yeah.
And naturally, you'd expect me to quit the Times while I was writing this book.
Naturally.
Well, it's a tempting offer, Mr. Tweed, but I'm afraid I'll have to turn you down.
John, you're being...
I know. I'm being stupid. But if some of us don't go on being stupid, your friend here will steal the whole country.
Now, look, Matthews, don't you
Mr.
think...
Mr. Tweed, I'm sure you'll excuse me if I don't accept your dinner invitation. And Miss Moore, the next time you make an engagement with me, be sure and tell me who's coming with you.
Don't worry. There won't be any next time. Mr. Tweed, shall we go into dinner?
Of course, my dear. I should be charmed.
The weeks after that were pure misery. Rosie being seen about more and more with Tweed at restaurants, theaters, all sorts of gay parties. And I wasn't the only one who was hit. Rosie's father had finally seen the light.
I tell you, John, I'm going to quit my job. I take no more favors from that thieving rascal.
Oh, I wish you could make Rosie feel that way.
Not her. She'll not listen to the smallest word against him. She's bewitched by the glitter of the man, beyond the fine promises he's made her. No, sir, she'll not be convinced till Tweed is in prison.
Not much chance of that right now, I'm afraid. Tweed's been too clever at covering his tracks.
Well, why can't he be just as smart as he is? After all, we're educated men, aren't you?
I wish I knew a way.
I'm telling you, we know where the money goes in. All we have to do is to find where it comes out.
And how do we do that? Do we just go down to the city hall and ask to see the books?
No, that wouldn't be very intellectual, would it? On the other hand, we might go down to the city hall and take a look at the books without us.
Oh, they put people in jail for breaking into places, especially city halls.
Still, the way I see it, the odds are even. If they catch us, we go to jail. If they don't catch us, they go to jail. Would you try it, lad?
What do you think? Well, it was a long chance, but I suppose we were both a little desperate. That it might never have paid off if it hadn't been for his son of the mayor, who was snooping around his office when he walked in, though walk doesn't exactly describe it. You see, his honor the mayor was rather drunk.
What's the meaning of this? Matthews, what are you doing in my office?
Well, I can explain it all, Your Honor.
Yes, you see, we come down to see you this afternoon, and you weren't here, sir. So we thought...
I think I'm too drunk to catch on, huh? Think I'm too drunk to... What'd you come to see me about?
Well, now, you see, it was about...
I wanted to get a statement, Your Honor. We were so shocked to hear you planned to resign.
What's that? Resign? What are you talking about?
Oh, didn't you know? Tweed has told a lot of people you're through.
Through?
That's what he said.
Oh, but he couldn't have. Bill wouldn't do a thing like that to me. He'd better not try. Not with what I know.
What do you know?
I know plenty, I tell you. I know everything. I've got a copy of every single transaction he and the rest of them ever made. Now, wait a minute. Let me open this safe. I'll show you things will make your hair stand on end. I'll show you enough to put them all in jail. I'll show you enough to tear this whole town apart. I'll show you enough!
How did she take it, Mr. Moore? What did she say when she saw the headline?
Not very much. She just said she didn't believe it. She'd have to hear him admit it himself.
You mean she went down to see Tweed?
Ah, don't worry, man. I've a feeling the glitter is all gone now. Look, there she is, coming across the park now. Would you rather I sort of disappeared?
Well, could you? I mean...
Sure, lad. I was young myself once. Good luck, my boy.
Rosie.
I suppose you've come to say I told you so. Well, go ahead and say it and get it over with.
Oh, I didn't come here to say that at all. I only came to tell you how much I love you.
You needn't think I'm ashamed. I haven't done anything to be ashamed of.
Of course you haven't. Of course you haven't. Lots of people were fooled by Tweed.
You mean you're not even angry with me?
Well, how can I be? I just told you I love you.
Oh, John. John, you're positively plummy.
Rosie. Rosie, listen.
The carousel.
Remember, darling?
Oh, I don't think I ever forgot.
The stately old trees waltz around in the breeze near the small carousel in the park.
change. We'll return to the Camel Screen Guild microphone in just a moment.
More doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette, according to a nationwide survey.
Three leading independent research organizations asked 113,597 doctors what cigarette they smoked. The brand named most was Camel. Of course, doctors smoke for relaxation and enjoyment, just as everyone else does. And millions of smokers have learned that Camel's rich, full flavor and cool, cool mildness bring them greatest smoking enjoyment. Try a Camel on your T-zone, that T-shaped area that includes your taste and throat, where you judge any cigarette. See how your taste is delighted by Camel's rich, full flavor. See what your throat reports about Camel's cool, cool mildness. Now, a special word of thanks to our stars. Deanna and Dick, you've made our evening a very happy one.
Well, Mike, we know that the proceeds from this show help support the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house and hospital. Believe me, it's always a pleasure to appear here. Right, Dick?
Right. And I just want to offer an amendment. Each week, the makers of Camel cigarettes send free smokes to the men in servicemen's hospitals. This week, among other hospitals, free Camels are being sent to Veterans Hospital, Knoxville, Iowa, U.S. Army and Navy General Hospital, Hot Springs, Arkansas, and U.S. Marine Hospital, Ellis Island, New York. Happy smoking, fellas. Your free Camels are on their way to you now.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Each week, the Screen Guild players start their summer vacation, and of course, they'll be back again for Camel cigarettes in the fall. But meanwhile, remember that Camels will be on the air all summer. The Camel Caravan, starring Vaughn Monroe, will be heard over this network every Monday night, a half hour earlier than you've been hearing the Screen Guild players. It will be a weekly swing around the country to pick up your favorite tunes in cities and towns from coast to coast. And with Vaughn Monroe in the driver's seat, it promises you a lot of delightful summer listening. Look for it, the Camel Caravan, starring Vaughn Monroe, over this network next Monday night. Up in Central Park was directed by Bill Lawrence and adapted for radio by Harry Cronman, with music conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Dick Ames appeared through the courtesy of Autolite. Deanna Durbin and Dick Ames can now be seen in the Universal Internationals up in Central Park. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood saying good night, and won't you have a Camel? This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.